Arvind Ramnani, IT services analyst at KeyBanc Capital Markets. I have the pleasure of introducing Beth Smith from. Beth, I'm thankful she was able to make it from the East Coast, but even more thankful because she hung out at LaGuardia for 8 hours.
Yesterday was bad in New York.
We weren't sure if she was going to make it, but I'm happy you made it.
Yeah.
Introduce Beth. Beth has a few prepared remarks, and after that, we'll jump into Q&A. Beth Smith is the general manager for IBM's Watson business. She's responsible for the overall success of IBM's AI strategy and execution. She leads engineering and delivery of Watson. The tooling that allows for seamless data experience and the global ecosystem of Watson partners and developers. Watson, as you know, is IBM's flagship AI system that runs natively on the IBM cloud. Beth has broad experience across several executive roles inside IBM, including prior positions as the general manager of IBM's analytics platform and information management group, as well as VP of IBM's WebSphere team. With that, I'll turn the floor to Beth.
Great, thank you. Thank you, and good morning, everybody. It's great to be here, even if it wasn't such a horrible travel day yesterday. But that happens. Any of you, I'm sure, deal with that more often than you would like. So I appreciate your attention. I do have a few prepared remarks before we get into some Q&A, where I thought I would just paint the picture of what AI and Watson means to us. And of course, I'll start with the standard disclaimer about any forward-looking statements and that sort of thing. You know, when I talk about this, I like to ground it in why now. And frankly, I start with the explosion of data. Just to share a few data points, there's 2.6 billion emails every second. 80 million MRIs a year, 600 million forms of malware with 400,000 variations daily, 100,000 new cancer articles a year, 70,000 new cybersecurity articles a year, and that's just a few examples that I picked to try to give you the breadth of what's going on. So huge explosion of data. That, along with what cloud and the core technology has allowed, and what has happened at some of the advancements of machine learning and deep learning, we now have the opportunity to say, okay, how do we use artificial intelligence and those techniques to turn this now into knowledge? And as I go through the morning, you'll hear me come back to this point of knowledge, because quite frankly, that's, in my mind, the value that comes out of that data and the real goal of what this is all about. So let's start with the opportunity. So of that data that I talked about, I just gave you some random examples. But if we step back and look at the data in the world, only about 20% of it is in the public. The other 80% is inside of enterprises. That means it's behind their firewalls, it's in the middle of their workflows and business processes, it's in their supply chains, it's in how they do their business and how they do their work overall. So the real opportunity for this is to unlock that decision support capability that is $2 trillion by 2025. Led, you know, I would say across many industries, but definitely led with financial services and industrials, but you could sort of see the connection. And it can start with some things that may seem simple and straightforward. So if we just take an example, many of the banks around the world are dealing with how do they provide customer service in a way that is timely for their customers, improves satisfaction, reduces the need for as many agents or agents in the moment. And they're doing that with a number of things like chatbot techniques. And there's actually a data point that says by 2020, chatbots and the follow-on of that will account for about $8 billion of value for the banks around the world. It's just a small example of what's in the opportunity here. So within IBM, we are focused across the company on how do we tackle that. I have the responsibility for the core Watson technology, but it's with my colleagues around the company that we actually deliver on the full value of what that's about. At its center, it is about Watson, Watson on the IBM cloud, and it is about enabling that with data that ranges from the public data to what may be industry or shared data to what is private to an enterprise. And then as a part of that, it is surrounded by a number of different things that would bring in the industry and process specification, specialization. So things like health, things like financial services, IoT, that gets into many of the things around industrial that I was talking about earlier. And then it's all built with security at the core, up and down what that system would be. So folks often ask me, all right, what is it that makes Watson special? Where is your focus? And I would summarize it as Watson is the AI platform for business. We are focused on the things that enterprises need to be able to deal with. And quite frankly, that starts first and foremost with workflows, business processes, the way business is done inside of a company. So this is about Watson then being embedded inside of those workflows, taking automation to the next level past what we've been able to see to date. That's the first aspect. The second aspect is about it being able to learn more, but with less data. So while I talked about the fact there's an enormous amount of data, and there's an enormous amount of data inside of enterprises, this data is also something that is not labeled for AI and machine learning systems. And so companies need techniques that allow it to learn more, to understand more, to have higher accuracy with less training data being necessary. So that's the second thing that we focus on, or techniques to be able to enable that. And then the third one is around the insights that our customers have and own. So in no way do we believe that data is a commodity, and we believe that the data that our enterprise clients have is a valued asset for them. And what that means is it's the data, and then it's the insights that can be gathered from that. So we focus in on techniques that enable that. Instead of allowing a customer's data to be mixed in with everybody else's, to, for all practical purposes, have a global one large knowledge graph, one large corpus of information, we focus on how to enable those customers so they can protect what is theirs and they can get the value of what comes out of those systems as it continues to improve. I also often get the question about, okay, well, what are the business models around this? And I would say it kind of comes down to four different aspects. The first one is sometimes referred to as PAYGO. So it is about the data access, paying per an insight, paying per an API call, paying as you use it from that standpoint. But then many customers will recognize that they have a pattern by which they are now looking to be able to expand broader. And so they want a form of a subscription that they can use to say, okay, as I use this, I want to be able to apply my subscription and get some financial benefits of committing to that subscription. The third one is with partners, and this is where we can have shared value with our partners. So whether or not it's partners like SoftBank or SK or Pearson or ABB or others, this is where they bring value, we bring value, and then there's a joint business model around the capability. And then finally, there are some examples where we do some licensing of the software in different ways as another part of what the business model will be. I'd like to share three different customer examples to try to give you a perspective that was across, you know, a number of different dynamics. So I'll start with Royal Bank of Scotland. And Royal Bank of Scotland is using Watson inside of their customer center to deliver customer support for their inquiries that come from their customers. They've named their system Cora, C-O-R-A. And as a part of that, Cora handles about 35% of the inquiries. And of those 35%, is able to independently, successfully handle 85% of them. So that allows Royal Bank of Scotland then to focus in on other things that they can work with their customers on and the more complex and sophisticated inquiries that may come about. Second example, an IoT example, elevators. So there are billions of elevators and escalators around the world. And think about, you know, when you're in an unfortunate situation that you may be caught in one of them where they, you know, aren't working, or worse yet, you're stuck on it, you really then appreciate it when systems are in place to anticipate and predict that there may be maintenance needed or there may be a failure about to happen, and how to better arm the crew that needs to be able to solve whatever that is in such a way that hopefully it's solved before the users, the consumers of the service, are actually impacted in any way. And that's what our IoT team is doing with Kony around the world. And then the third one I selected was Sogetti. And I selected this one because it is about security analysts. And in the world that we're in today, there's a lot of activity, a lot of attention around cybersecurity. And these analysts are in a situation where they have a vast amount of information. Remember I said in the beginning, 70,000 cybersecurity blogs a year alone, as well as a number of different other forms of information and alerts that come about. They've got to make quick decisions. They've got to analyze it quickly and make quick decisions. And so Sogetti is using our cybersecurity technology with Watson to be able to do that, to be able to help their security analyst work through, first of all, the identification of the threat, and then also focus in on root cause of whatever that may be. And it's taking it down to just minutes instead of hours. And in that kind of a situation, every minute matters. So when I really think about this world that we're now in with AI, a topic that comes up a lot is around trust. And this is something that we've taken very seriously. We publish the trust and transparency principles. We've challenged other tech companies to be a part of it because we think it is fundamental about good tech and the things that we can do to enable the advancement of this in ways that help people and companies around the world. It's down to 3 points. So the first one is the purpose of the tech is to help, to augment human intelligence. So just think about the example I just talked about with Sogetti. It is augmenting those security analysts, helping them work their way through a lot of information in a short amount of time. Back to this point of those insights belong to the creator. The value of those insights belong to the creator of that data. And these systems must be transparent and explainable. If something is flagged on an insurance claim, or a mortgage is rejected, or other things that are just routine in our lives today, it needs to be explained. How did that decision come about? So these systems must be transparent and explainable to be really valued by what the enterprise needs. So in summary, I'll go back to where I started. It's really at the core of this, it's about data. Data is transforming every industry. It is in an explosive amount of data. The market is there, and the market is there to enable decision-making around that. We've built our platform focused on business and enterprise needs. And we are scaling across industries, across horizontal application systems in different ways, and across different forms of usage, from things that people would do with solutions all the way to a pay-as-you-go API call. So with that, thank you. And Arvind, I'll come join you.
Thank you. That was it was really insightful. I have a few questions, some from that I've collected from the audience, but just run through as many as we can.
Sure.
When I look at the past couple of decades, technology has had a fairly profound impact, and from a compute perspective, it's gone from mainframes to personal computers to the internet and then mobile. And when I look in the near term, let's call it two, 3 years, or when I look in the long term, what are some of the key trends in technology we should be looking for, besides AI, and what are some of the game changers we should expect to see?
So, to talk about that, I actually want to go back to this point I mentioned earlier about knowledge. So in my technical career, which is coming up on 31 years, I've seen a few things take place. And, we saw what took place with Moore's Law and transistors doubling every 18 months. And think about what's happened in our lifetimes and what you can now carry in your pocket compared to what you had access to when maybe you became an early professional. So that's one era. And that technology unlocked new things. The second one came about with Metcalfe's Law, and it was really then about networks and connected systems and the power of the square of the connected nodes or devices. And so think about the large companies and systems that came about because of that and what could take place there in the whole internet era, and then companies like Facebook, et cetera, that could really take advantage of that, Google, et cetera. So now I think it's this era that's going to be about knowledge. And I use the word knowledge because it is about unlocking that value from the data. We know data is doubling every 12 to 18 months. So from that standpoint, we're seeing a similar point. And so I really think the trends are going to be about how to unlock more and more of that and how to enable people to take full advantage of what that knowledge is, and then to use it. So that's where AI really comes into play. But then it's also to how to use that with things like blockchain and other emerging technologies.
Great. And can you just outline what the state of AI is? And you've been close to this for a while. So and also kind of your expectations 2-3 years back versus where we are now. How has that changed?
So I often think about the first time I did business over the internet, financial business over the internet. I often think about the first time I communicated with a device that understood me or realized where I was going before I chose to go or whatever. So those things kind of come into mind. But when we really think about the landscape of AI, there's sort of three phases. There's narrow AI. Frankly, that's where we are, have been. We're on the edge of maybe advancing past that. Narrow AI is the idea that a task can be handled. The next phase is broad AI, and broad AI is now about learning from one task and applying it to a very different task and how to do that. And we're seeing some early signs of that. So, for example, let's take an insurance example and being able to do imagery of house damage. So you take it in the southeast around hurricanes and that sort of thing. Excuse me. And we can take pictures and understand that and train the system on what that would mean. What about if it's earthquake damage? Is that going to look the same or different? I'm on the tail end of a cold. To a narrow AI system, that's different. to a human that's similar, and to a broad AI system that is similar. Then the future, the science fiction side of the whole thing, is general AI. I would tell you that's for the next century. Maybe they'll get started 2050 or later, but that's where the science fiction will really come in.
Great. Great. And you know, just in technology, a lot of technology is about coming out of product. A lot of the technology is coming up with a product and kind of changing it as, you know, based on feedback for the customers. Has your market approach changed with AI? You know, has it forced to for you to kind of relook at what IBM's value proposition is from a Watson or AI perspective? And is it just kind of a portfolio of your offerings, or is it kind of embedded in all that you do?
So it has changed. We came out with Jeopardy in 2011, and then the first business approach was customized engagement. They were around a few patterns, customer engagement and discovery, how to find things that you didn't know you were looking for. The patterns have very much resonated. But the shift that has happened is to move from highly customized engagements to a platform, a self-service platform. It's been a couple of years now. We released the Watson platform focused in on APIs, so cloud-based APIs. You can do small and simple things and then put them together to do more broad things. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is very much it's, you know, we refer to it as a silver thread through IBM. So whether or not it is inside of our global technology services team and what they use, they've got 1,400 clients using the IBM services platform with Watson, as an example. Or it's inside of our solutions, like what I was talking about with the cybersecurity. Or it's something that we use around HR and talent or whatever. We have a silver thread throughout the company as well. And that's a change that we've picked up over the last few years also.
Great. Okay. So clearly this AI is a competitive market. You have some fairly large, Amazon, Googles of the world, and then you have some niche players. Can you perhaps elaborate on some of the capabilities that IBM Watson has from some of your competitors, and where you win versus where you lose on some of the deals?
So, you know, I'll go back to the differentiators I mentioned earlier. We focus in on the enterprise. The enterprise means it really starts with workflows, processes, how enterprises do business. We don't waver from that. That is absolutely part of our heritage in general, and then really where we focus. The second point is this piece that we've taken a different approach than the other guys, and we've recognized the need for learning more with less data, and that is a different approach than the other guys have taken for different kind of use cases, I would say. Theirs have been somewhat more direct consumer interaction, and ours have been focused on how do you go from that to what the business needs as a full end-to-end piece. So the second one is about how to then learn more with less data, and then the final one is this piece that I keep reiterating about owning your data and owning your insights as a part of it. So, you know, we make our choices based on these enterprise examples. You know, I expand out what I'm doing in Watson Assistant, which is our core capability for conversational platform systems, so things that you would use in call centers, et cetera. I make the decisions about the things to go in that based on what businesses are going to need, you know, recognizing there'll be an escalation to an agent for things. There'll be back-end processing that needs to take place. There's got to be those connections to those other systems, et cetera. That's just an example.
Yeah. So, and you know, just given IBM's breadth of offerings, you know, when you look at AI, you look at blockchain, it's clear to me how you're able to monetize when it's a distinct solution. But when you embed AI as you know, part of another offering, how are you able to monetize it?
So my colleagues take advantage of that because they embed. But they do it in two ways. So one is sometimes it can be, I'll call it a feature, that can cause them to be able to have an opportunity to increase the value of whatever that offering may be. Maybe an extension can be done in different ways there. The other thing is focus in on how to add more value in the base product of whatever that offering may be. So how to do things such that maybe net promoter score, for example, which is a great proxy for customer satisfaction and customer feedback, so that it can be improved on a particular offering as a part of it. So it varies across the different product areas, and even within a product area, it can vary because there can be certain things where it kind of becomes an ingredient that just helps them continue with their base capability, and then in other cases, it becomes something that's now an added, what I call a feature, as a part of it.
Great. So you know, when I look at AI, I kind of look at four distinct buckets. There's compute, the algorithms, data, and of course user adoption. Which areas do you think we're making really good progress in, and where do you think we're falling short?
So I would tell you across the board, there's progress across the board, and there's more to come across the board, would be my simplest answer of it. It's part of why we continue with the investment we have in IBM Research, which is across all those elements, not just any one piece of it, to continue to advance further and further. You know, because like I also told you, we're in the early stages as an industry of what AI can do. LaGuardia.
Well, I'm just glad you made it. earlier you were talking about the importance of data and particularly in some of these regulated environments in financial services and healthcare. What do your clients really think of kind of your IBM's kind of securing the data and using the data?
Well, no matter what the industry is, I will tell you, I get very direct feedback from clients about our data policy in support of it. And I would also tell you that their thinking has advanced over the last 12, 24 months. They seem to be less worried about it a couple of years ago, and now they absolutely see that and recognize, therefore, the stuff we're doing to protect it and to be sure that their competitors don't get advantages and value from them is becoming more and more of just a table stakes for kind of requirement for them.
Great. We touched upon this a little bit earlier, but when I look at kind of the sectors, usually financial services are the most forward-thinking in terms of making investments in technology. But from an AI perspective, have you seen any distinct differences between sectors and and particularly with Watson, are there particular areas where you've seen high interest? You showed us three examples, but if you have any more examples, that'd be good to hear.
Yeah, so, definitely financial services, and I picked a bank, but, across financial services, I wouldn't just focus in on banking only. But also industrial, an awful lot, anywhere from the points of the Internet of Things, when you think of the sensors that exist out there and the data that's coming from that, to the point of supply chain and manufacturing. So you get a lot, you know, a lot of wave there. Healthcare, you know, healthcare is one that transparency is important. That last mile of work is important. There's a massive amount of data. It's not accessible to everybody. So we're seeing it as well, but not as high as those other two. But I would tell you that there's a couple of horizontal areas that seem to be touching across the board. And the main one, across the industries, the main one is this point I'm talking about with conversational systems. And it starts with chatbots, but it's not just about a chatbot. It's not just about something that understands one simple domain or a simple set of questions. It is about then helping that user, whoever that user is interacting with it, be able to solve their problem, address their question, deal with whatever they're trying to do. And so those kind of conversational systems, you know, we see in all forms of call centers and help desks in all sorts of industries, and both for external and internal. You know, some customers actually start that with what they do internally to enable their employees to better serve their customers. So that's something that's cross-industry, and it's a very repeatable pattern. The other piece, and I've mentioned this discovery pattern several times today, it is also quite repeatable and applies to kind of any industry where you think about unstructured information, documentation, reports, articles. Just think about massive amount of stuff to keep up with. And so we see that as well, and I think that's what will pick some of those other industries up.
And I guess what are some of the industries that you feel are falling behind or they'll take a while to get caught up?
Well, I think actually it sort of varies, but, you know, to some degree, I'd almost put retail in that category, but I have to say almost for the following reason. When it comes to the customer interaction part, they're there. When it comes to the supply chain part, they're there. But you see less throughout with retail than you do with some of these others.
Great. And just last couple of questions. When I think of AI, you know, there's and speak to large company CIOs, there's this excitement around this robotic process automation or RPA, you know, bots, some chat bots, but bots in general, and then there's this kind of Watson which offer like, you know, fully cognitive systems. Can I just kind of talk about where enterprises are spending money and where the interest is? Is it the basic RPA or is it more like the cognitive part of AI?
Well, I'm going to tell you it's both, but I want to go back to what I said about how we're approaching the market has evolved because it's pertinent to this. So, you know, I said we started with larger customized engagements, and then we've pivoted to this point of a platform that's more about self-serving and scaling from there. The adoption of this technology is a similar point, which is why I went back to that. So in places you see it as the next rung of the ladder from an RPA standpoint, focused in on a particular task in a process and how to take that automation to the next level. In other places, you'll see it be something that people are transforming all around. You see a lot of digital transformation, for example, that's grounded in a number of AI capabilities.
Great. And last question for me. When you speak to people on AI, what are some of the largest misconceptions?
So there's kind of two, and they represent a spectrum, I would say. So the first one is not magic. I mean, there's really this point that it is about data. It's about data. It's about training. It's about expertise. It's about understanding how it's being used, the workflow it's in, the process it's in. It's not magic, right? So that's one side of it. The other side of it, and the reason I say they're kind of on a spectrum here, is there's this huge misconception that it is complex, lengthy, and expensive to get to any benefit. And that's also a misconception. People get benefit in measured now in days and weeks, not years. So those are the two kind of the two ends of it. And you know, I think we're making progress on both.
Yeah, and just to quickly follow up on that, I mean, is this kind of consistent with what you've seen with compute, right? Like, so because maybe even, you know, you have these large mainframes, and now we have same amount of compute in our like pockets, right? This miniaturization of compute, is it also happening on the services side, where you're able to get a lot more benefit a lot more quickly?
Well, I think. I kind of put it in a little different category because I kind of see that compute thing grounded in things like Moore's Law and what the capabilities allowed you to do there. This is more, it's back to that evolving model of how to approach it and a point of a simple API service that allows you to very easily do something like ticket classification in a support system. That's a simple thing, right? But can get real quick value versus you're starting with a complete redo of your entire business line. So I think it's a little different than that, but I do think I've certainly seen in my career, and I think if we all think about our life, you know, technology advances, and it gets to the point that it is so much more approachable and digestible, and it kind of goes in line with that, and you know. So from that, it's a similar point.
Great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking
the time.
Thank you.